He is Vishnu and Baba. And Baba again, all with smears of blood on him. He said, oh, this is terrible. Oh, God, what's happening? You see, Vishnu tried to sort of explain, you see, quickly, well, we have to do something. We must get Baba into the house and all that. Well, I just didn't have the strength to get on a cycle and go down to the Mandali's house, which was a little distance away, get a hold of Duncan. So Money went cycling down to fetch Duncan back up to the house. In the meantime, we managed to get a chair out to the car, and we got Baba seated in the car and managed to get him and bring him and put him on his bed in the room. Then by the time Duncan came, and Duncan arranged to have Baba taken up there to the hospital, and then he had to have his tongue stitched. And then also they tried to take x-rays to see what had happened about the hip. And then afterwards, Baba again was brought back to the house. After a few days, Don said the best thing to do is take Baba down to Pune. So Baba was taken to Pune. He was for a couple of days, I think, in a nursing home. It's all sort of vague in my mind now.
It wasn't a great facility at Satara, was it?
No, there wasn't. You see, that's just it. That's why Don wanted to take him down. So in Pune, he went to this nursing home. And then there was this very fine military orthopedic surgeon, which Duncan got in touch with. So Baba never likes to be away from home, as it were, no matter how serious the thing is. So he after a day or so, I think, in that nursing home, Baba was brought to this bungalow which we'd taken there in Pune, which was right near where Mirji was living at the time. And then Baba's leg was put in traction. And that was very uncomfortable and painful for Baba. And he was for a number of months there in Pune. Now, in the meantime, Nadia and I were left in Satara to... First we came to Pune also. And then Baba said, we're not going back to Satara. I mean, nobody wanted to see Satara again after all this having happened. As much as we'd love Satara, we even thought, how beautiful it would be to live there because the climate's so equable. I mean, it's just enough rain to make everything nice. The roads are beautiful. It was clean. The bungalow we had was so nice. But still after that accident and seeing Baba coming there in that car, we just couldn't bear the thought of being there. And by the way, what is so interesting also is that on this road, which is not hasn't got heavy traffic, there after the accident happened, sort of how to find any conveyance, say to take Baba back, or to get the Mandali to the hospital. Then a car comes along with his lone driver. So as I say, because Vishnu was the one that was least only just jolted, he was to take Baba in that taxi. And then later on, the others managed to get a truck, and the truck brought them into the hospital. And afterwards, that man in that car disappeared. Nobody knows who he was, what his name was, where he came from or anything, but he just came there just in time to take Baba back to Satara. So as I say, Nadia and I were sent back to the bungalow to pack up everybody's belongings and take everything back to Merced. So we packed everything, and this Mrs. Cooper, whose house we'd rented, her son very kindly offered to drive Nadia and me back to Pune when we got all the luggage done. Bhagirath's truck came. We saw that the truck was loaded for Merced. And then we went to Pune just to tell Baba that everything had done. Then we too had to come on here to Merzad to see about the unloading and getting the place ready so that later on when Baba was brought back here, everything would be in order. But it was a harrowing time. I mean, again, Baba having to go through all this pain and this torture. Because this time it was so much more serious than the American accident in the sense that, I mean, this fractured, I don't know, that head of the head of the thing and that socket around there was fractured or out of place. so that the socket couldn't be put, the ball of the hip couldn't be put back into the socket again in the sense that it would be as it originally should be. And naturally, doctors have wanted to operate on Baba, but Baba refused to have any operation. And in 1957, I think that's when Harry Kenmore came and gave Baba some treatment and stayed here. That time I had to look after Harry. He was staying in a small bungalow here, and I had to see to his bath water and his food and this and that. And we spent our time having altercations because I no longer had an American pronunciation. And well, that's one of those side issues that took place. Before the time when, I think before Harry came, Baba had gone down to Bombay, and he had taken part of the group with him, but Nadia and I had been left behind. So, well, we didn't know why, except we just thought, well, there'd be too many people crowding in Anavaz's apartment. And I mean, that was Baba's way of doing. Sometimes he'd take some with him, sometimes he'd leave you behind. And you just accepted it. So at that time, the only people that were staying here at the in the Mirzad household was Naj and I on the women's side, and Kaka and Gustaji on the Mandali side. And just shortly after Baba went to Bombay, Gustaji wasn't well. We thought that he had just gotten a cold and a bit of fever, and then he seemed to be getting a slight chest condition, so I put some thing to some embrocation on his chest to make him feel better. And we used to try to coax him to go and rest in a bigger room and let us open his bedding so that he would be comfortable. And he lived in the tiny room here at Mirzad, and he kept everything tied up and locked and the bedding roll tied up, and he used to just live in these like rags or patch clothes. And he refused, but later on, when he wasn't feeling too well, then we coaxed him to go into the larger room. That time we decided also we better send for a doctor because he might have something, I mean, that should need attention. The doctor came, but he didn't seem to think it was anything too serious. And so a few days more went by, and then Naj and I had come over, had our lunch, we were resting, and at tea time we went over, we'll see how Gustaji is. And Kaka had prepared some very light weak tea for him, and Kaka had just gone to the room to give him the tea, and just after that we came, and Kaka found that Gustaji was dead. It all happened just sort of like this suddenly, whether he went off in his sleep or how he went off, nobody knows. He just found him lying on his side, and he wasn't there. So then we got made connection with people in Nagar and Erich's family there, who were always very helpful in situations like this. And then the body was taken to Mirzad, and word was sent to Baba that... Oh, yes, Tychobad was also living here at the time. It was before he went up to Mirzad. So Nadia and I felt, well, maybe after all, Baba had wanted us to be here with Gustaji. At least somebody should be here with him at the end. So that's... Then it was later on, I think, that after that, when Baba came, after Baba came back from Bombay, because I think Harry came sometime in November, and stayed a few weeks. Then, as I say, in 1958, then Baba went to the West again with the Mandali, and we stayed here in Mirzad. And that time, I think we went down to Bombay to meet him when he on his return, and then motored back with Baba to Mirzad. And as I say, in those days, life was at sort of going at a slower pace. Baba was doing more seclusion work. He was seeing very few people. And our life naturally adapted itself to Baba's pace. And also Baba's health wasn't good. With all the years of hard work he was doing, must work and fasting and seclusion work. It was beginning now gradually to tell on Baba's health. Then
did you try to entertain Baba then, or was he more aloof and more indifferent to these type of things? Or
more indifferent. The last entertainment we gave Baba was when Kitty was here. It was before we went to the West, and that's when we put on this train skit in which Kitty and I were a posse couple, and the others were Mohammedan couple, two were Hindu couple, and all that, and all the funny sort of things that happen when all these different types and religions get together on a train journey. And it was so amusing that Baba laughed and laughed and laughed, and in fact even had us do it for the mandali and had the mandali come and see it. But sometimes only it used to be just like Baba and Mero and maybe one or two others that didn't happen to be in the play that would see it. But this time Baba had the mandali present too. And Nilo afterwards came to me and said, "Rano, I didn't know you could talk Gujarati." I said, "You'd be surprised." Because during that time when Kitty and I were in Bombay, we used to pass by that entrance which led into the Tower of Silence. And outside we'd see some of these old Parsis sitting there sunning themselves. And that intonation, that Parsi intonation, somehow must have registered my ear. So when I had to play this old Parsi man in Mani's skit, then I even managed to get that Parsi intonation in the wording. So this was I just from remembering it of that time before. But after that,
did Baba seem to be withdrawing more and more during his seclusion work? Say after 58, 59, 60?
In a way, yes. In a way, yes. Because, I mean, excepting for our cuts. Now, in 1962, Baba had the East-West Gathering. So on an occasion like that, then, I mean, Baba would be absolutely blooming. Even at earlier times, I can remember Baba, you know, not feeling very well, maybe before darshan, and saying to me, "How do I look?" And you'd see Baba looking tired and sort of weighed down with the work of the world, as it were. But I'd say, "Baba, I see you like this now, but when you go out in front of all your lovers," I said, "you'll be just the powerhouse with the works turned on full blast." And I said, "nobody will ever know that this is how you feel, because," I said, "you'll be radiating such beauty." And this is what Baba did every time. He'd just leave everybody like this. And it's what happened in the East-West Gathering and the 1965 darshan also for Easterners. And East-West Gathering, I mean, when you think now of the lovers that are coming and the hordes that are wanting to come to Baba, I mean, you look back now, that seems like the handful only that came. And Baba used to give them quite a bit of time, because the time that they were here, I think, what was it, about a week? No, three or four days.
4 days.
4 days, huh?
10 years ago, just about.
So 4 days, so Baba would see the Westerners in the morning. And then only the Westerners in Guru Prasad Hall. And then in the afternoon, then there was the big bundle outside where the Easterners had congregated, and also a certain section would be kept for the Westerners, so the Westerners could participate in that also, where their talks were given and bhajan was played and songs were sung. And to give them an idea of how Baba had a darshan program, and then everybody would come up afterwards and take Baba's darshan. And actually in 1965, Baba had intended again to call the Westerners, and even forms had gone out to be filled in and brought, and the darshan was going to take place here in Naminagar. And there were some new quarters being built here that Baba was going to get a hold of to house all the Westerners. And then I don't know what happened, suddenly Baba just decided differently. He said no, he was only going to give the Eastern darshan for the Easterners and Guru Prasad. So that was also took place at the back, like the East-West Gathering, in that big compound at the back of the building. And there were just, three or four. Harry Kenmore came, And there was Joseph Harb and Ben Hayman. And one young couple that happened to have come from Australia, so they were there for the darshan. Otherwise, there were no Westerners that time for the darshan. To go back to the 1950-1960, when Naj and I were staying at Bindra House, that was Erich's family's home, I was taken very ill in 1959. I had apparently been quite all right up to that particular time, and I still don't know whether I got food poisoning or from eating a mango or something, whatever it is, food poisoning took place. And I was seriously ill that night, and the doctor had to come. And then Gave was sent for the next day, and she gave me saline injections and so forth. And I really thought I was too sick to care. But nevertheless, I was aware that there was certain activity going on in the house that night. And whenever Nadja would come in to see whether I was all right, I'd say, Nadja, why are those people all billing around outside there? I mean, this is the middle of the night. What's happened? And Baba had particularly told Mayor one that night to go to bed early. And so I said, this is very strange. Why are all these people? No, you know, Nadja just bustled around me, sort of, oh, it's nothing. As I say, I was too sick to care. The next day, I was kind of feeling a little, slightly bit better. And Baba came to see me, how are you, and all that. And then he said to me, you know, last night was a toss-up between you and Papa, as we always call Erich's father, Papa. I laughed, see, not knowing what Baba was talking about. Evidently, I must have shown that in my face, because Baba said to me, didn't you know that Papa died last night? I said, no. I said, nobody told me. Because Nadia was afraid that she'd upset me and all that. I mean, I'd rather know something than be mystified what's going on, but she didn't realize that, so she had kept it from me. Nobody had told me in the morning either. So I said, oh my heavens, because Papa had not been very well, but not seriously ill. And when he used to meet his old cronies, you know, he would tell them about, because I hadn't been all too well some time before that, you know, and he had been worrying about this Western lady that was staying with him, and he would tell his old cronies about it, you see, and they'd be very sympathetic and all. So then when Papa dies and I'm still here, when these people came to hear there was a death at Bindra House, they thought I had died. So very few of them showed up for Papa's funeral. Then they came to know afterwards that he had died, because he had a heart attack and he just went like that. He had not been feeling too well in the evening. Erich had come with Gave to see him, and I think coaxed him to eat a bit of soup and all that. And then just like that he went, and I think he went taking Baba's name. So that was one of the couple of times that Baba decided I had to go on living a bit longer. So he did something about it. Now, I think it was in 1960, I was still staying at Bindra House, and Baba would do things suddenly that would take you by surprise. You would never always know how to cope with it, but eventually you would. And in this instance, it was that when Baba came to Bindra House and greeted everybody, he greeted them all, and when he came to me, he just walked past me as if I was paper on the wall. I said, this is very strange. I'm standing here, Baba hasn't even given me a look. He's embracing everybody, he's even greeting the servants. And I just as if I wasn't even in the room. Well, this happened a few times. And I thought, oh, this is terrible. I mean, I've got to work this out, or because I've got to live with it. So there must be a reason why Baba's doing this, and I've got to find out and do something about it. Well, I couldn't question Baba about it, because obviously I was non-existent. So I worked it out all by myself and came to a very happy solution. And that was that the effort it took Baba not to see me made me all the more conscious of Baba's knowing that I was there. That solution then satisfied me completely. Because if you consider, you see somebody, a natural reaction is to greet them. But if you just ignore them, the very fact that you're ignoring them shows that you're making an effort to do so. So naturally, if Baba made an effort to ignore me, that means Baba was conscious of my presence. That's all I minded. So I was quite happy after that.
That must have bothered you at first, though, when Baba...
Of course. I was just burnt up because I couldn't understand. I knew I hadn't done anything to cause any displeasure that Baba should ignore me. So why was Baba suddenly doing like this? It's just one of these things that Baba would do to test one, to see how one would carry through, how one... Because Baba always said that you must be aloof from... what do you call it? Pleasure and praise, as well as disapproval, so that if you can make yourself so that you don't mind either way what Baba's doing, well, you've achieved something. But, I mean, it was very difficult. Naturally, your first reaction is to be upset. Very often in Mirzad here, Baba would start needling me at the table just to see what my reaction would be. And you could tell from the look in his eye that he was having himself a bit of fun. But even then, you know, sometimes Baba would touch just the raw spot and you'd feel very badly. And then you'd realize, no, Baba's doing this on purpose. And once you could get yourself adjusted to that, then you could take it and you couldn't, and you didn't mind. And once Baba realized that, then Baba would try something else.
But he must have wanted a reaction. He didn't want you to...
He wanted to have a reaction, and he
got
it.
I won't be upset because I know about...
No, he wanted the reaction, but on the other hand, also, he wanted to see that you can control that reaction. You see, there are two ways of looking at it. As I say, the whole ashram was made up of people who were not mamby-pamby people. They all had a certain temperament and a certain something about them that they would not take things lying down. But on the other hand, I mean, you had to learn also to take what Baba say without feeling either pleasure or disappointment, whatever way it was. But it was very difficult, very difficult. For the East-West Gathering, then, that was the time when I did the Four Journeys chart. Baba wanted to give an explanation to the Westerners on this particular point, so he outlined what he wanted me to do. So I did it on a sort of full-size drawing paper, but Baba said, that's too small, and he wanted something chart-size, so we got somebody in Ahmednagar to go by my outline and do something that was about 7 feet high and in width in proportion with all the print very large, so somebody could stand there with a stick and point out to the various things which Baba explained in one of his discourses to the Westerners there in 1962. When Baba gave me work to do, such as charts or other things, then he always used to give me ample time in which to work. And in fact, even used to set hours, like in the 10 circles chart, I had to work so many hours a day. But when I was doing anything on my own, it always somehow seemed that Baba knew it. And I would find I wouldn't have time enough to do it, or I'd be in the midst of something and I would have to, put paperweights so the paper wouldn't blow and hope that the thing would be intact when I came back to it. So that, in a way, sort of got me in the way of being lazy as far as drawing was concerned. And anyway, I'm lazy by nature. So I decided that the line of least resistance was not to attempt any drawing. Then I suddenly got an urge sometimes to, oh, well, try out something. So that's that period of the 1960s is when I called myself a once-a-year artist, when I would try to do some drawing and painting for Baba that would be of a symbolic nature in which Baba was the central figure. It was done on a small scale because I knew if I tried to do anything on a large scale, I probably wouldn't have time to get it finished in time. So I did it on a small scale in watercolor crayons. And Baba, of course, was very pleased when I would present him with this on his birthday and give his lovely sign of approval, and then he would put his cheek out for me to give him a kiss. So that, to me, was ample reward. So then I knew that Baba would probably just put these drawings away somewhere and forget about them. So then after having given them to Baba, and then all the presents would be put aside, and Baba would leave the table and would be going over to the mandali, then I would surreptitiously come and collect my drawing again so that I keep them, have kept them all safe together. As I say, when we used to go to Pune in the summer months, April, May, and June, Baba used to let the women occasionally go to a movie. In those days, there used to be some very good movies. And once or twice Baba went, but later on, when his health was indifferent, he didn't go. And as I say, during that period, he was more withdrawn and more involved in his seclusion work. But even then, occasionally, he would call people there to Guru Prasad. And especially on Sundays, some of the Pune Baba lovers, Baba would allow them to come, and then they used to play the famous Laris card game, where there'd sometimes be so many that each would get no more than about two cards. And the losers had to rub their noses in the carpets, and then you'd hear hilarious shouting and all sorts of strange sounds emanating from the mandali hall. And Baba used to enjoy those times because they were sort of a relaxation for him. And then there was that period then in that late 60s when Baba took a liking to those records of Jim Reeves, and every day Bunny used to play some for him. And the one record or side which Baba liked very much was "There's a Heartache Following Me," and that used to be like the theme song. The mandali would hear that in the dining room where we would be sitting with Baba at tea time. And they'd know, Baba's coming, you see, then they'd give the signal so that the other mandali would be all collected by the time Baba came to the mandali hall. Baba loved his voice, not so much the type of songs he sang, some of them, yes, because they were not very startling in the way of songs, though some of them really had some lovely words. But it was the quality of Jim Reeves' voice that Baba said touched him. And he said someday somebody with a voice like Jim Reeves would sing Francis's guzzles. So as I say, in between times we used to go to the movies. And in 1967, Baba, I don't know whether he, just knowing that we would probably later not be going to the movies, just made us so filled with movies that we just got so that we just would groan at the thought of going to one. Anavaz was with us at the time there in Guru Prasad, and every morning Baba would say, "Now, what is there playing this week in the picture houses, you see?" And we'd say, "Oh, Baba, there's not a very good movie now. Let's not go this week, you see." No, you must go, said Baba. So he'd say, we'd pick out the one that seemed the least bad, and then we'd get tickets and we'd go. And Baba was doing that with also some of the mandali. They would be going to some Indian pictures, and they used to, when money'd come and tell him, "You've got to go to the pictures," Baba said, "You've got to go to the pictures, so select some Indian film you like." Please, with folded hands, they'd stand there telling money, "Tell Baba, we don't want to go to the pictures." Money said, "Doesn't matter." Baba said, "You've got to go." So we just went to movie after movie after movie. That was in 1967. And from that time after that, nobody went to the movies. And then in 1968, of course, Baba's big seclusion, when he spent so many hours in the hall here at Mirazed, and the servants, those in gardeners, watering the garden, or those washing vessels at the back, even we had to be going around on tiptoe, so not a sound would reach Baba in that hall when he was working. And then, when he'd be finished, then he'd clap, and then Erich would come in and he'd be dripping from head to foot with the exertion that Baba was going on, whatever Baba's work is, Nobody was present to know. But Bobby used to show his afters where his legs were just black and blue from this constant pounding like this he would do on his leg. Then the same thing, you see, when we went in 1968 to Guru Prasad. The yellow chair that's in the museum now is the chair that Bobby used and had brought to his room in which to sit in his bedroom to do the seclusion work. And there also, when we knew that Bob had gone to his room, there'd be pin drop silence throughout the house. Somebody would drop a lid or the door bang or something like that. We had to be so careful that nothing would happen that would in any way interfere with Bob's working. And then after he would clap, then he would come out and then go to the Mandis hall and, as he said, listen to his bogus news and the mail and things like that and relax a bit. Or when he'd come to our quarters, then it around tea time, Money would play records for him. And so life that way, we never went out. We didn't go shopping. We never stepped out of that compound, excepting about a few days before we were to leave Guru Prasad to come back to Mehrzad. Baba gave us permission that those who had to go to the dentist or the oculist or something like that could go out. Otherwise, we never stepped out of the compound that whole time. Gradually to do dying 2D, so that here I was doing much more. I used to take turns off with the mandali. But that time there in 1969, it was about the day, I think, before Baba dropped his body. I was with Bao in the room, and Bao was holding Baba's legs, and I was holding Baba's arms. And I don't know what happened to me. I just started crying. I couldn't stop, and I was trying so hard not to show it. You know, there was I trying to hold Baba and doing like this, you see. And Baba got one look at me. Listen to that. So that made me feel even worse, you know. But and with Baba, as I tell you, all through my life with Baba, that if once Baba started me crying, it used to be the most terrible thing to stop. Because I don't know what he did to one. Because before I met Baba, my heavens, if I went to a play or anything, I mean, the last thing I wanted to do is show any emotion. And I suppose Baba just had to get that all out of my system. But now, the things didn't make me cry, but just Baba made me cry. And whether this was a premonition of something that was to happen or what, I don't know, because I know, like in Baba's accident in 52, Kitty started getting all upset naturally, seeing Baba sitting there on the hill. I said, Kitty, this is not the time to get upset. I mean, I was just as cool as a cucumber. At that, I mean, when a crisis takes place or anything like that, I mean, I won't let go. I mean, I just let go later. But at that time, I mean, that night when I was sitting, when Gavi and I had to be with Baba that night because the mandali hadn't come back, I mean, I just practically had rigors sitting there, you know, just that let down and reaction after the accident had taken place. And so all, as I say, always at a time when a crisis like that happens, then I can control. I mean, even when Baba dropped his body, I mean, the shock was so great. But at the time, there were things to be done. So you could do them, and you don't think of yourself, and you can let go. And then later on, then that's the worst part. And as far as the accidents, I mean, the Baba dropping his body, I mean, Baba gave us so many indications that this was the end of everything. But I mean, none of us could even grasp it. And some idiot of a person once said, "Well, didn't Baba give you some inkling or some clue that this would happen?" I mean, imagine if Baba had done such a thing. I mean, we were just, oh. I mean, Baba just knew that, I mean, we couldn't have taken it then, whereas taking us by surprise like this, he knew we would have to make the effort, because after all, as Baba said, this is only an overcoat that I'm wearing, this is not the real me. And even though we were used to Baba, and even though now you feel a void, it's not got that poignancy that the very beginning had. Because you feel that Bob is with you, even though you can't see him. That's the only thing that makes things bearable. And so, as I say...
Didn't Baba in 68, though, the fall of 68, wasn't he withdrawing himself? So wasn't Baba withdrawing himself?
Yes, definitely. I mean, at the very end there, Baba just... I mean, anything that had to do with even outside things, people would write letters, Baba would hear the letters, but then Baba would make Erich answer them. And always, I mean, he would say, I will guide you inwardly to anybody who asked Baba's advice and questions and things like that. So that's why when people come to us now for advice, I mean, who are we to be able to know how to give advice? I mean, this is Baba's. We can use our sort of intelligence about how maybe we would handle a situation, but the very kernel of the thing has to be Baba. So I myself have always said, this is what Baba used to say, even during his lifetime, was that you must do your utmost to the best of your ability, and I will help you inwardly. People did it then, so even though Baba's dropped his body, the same thing applies. That if they have that love for Baba and feeling for Baba and know that Baba is there, then if they have a situation which they feel that they can't handle, well, they must do it up to their utmost, and Baba's there to help them. They must realize that. Otherwise, what is their faith and what is the love for Baba then, if you don't realize that Baba's there with you to help you? He'll always be there when you need him most. That is unquestioning. But, in the early days, I mean, you couldn't do any little thing without telling Baba. I mean, no matter what it is, you couldn't make a change in that, any household arrangement, or even if you have the slightest pain, you should report it to Baba. And one day I remember I wasn't feeling very well, and somebody happened to tell Baba I wasn't feeling well. And I said, but Baba, I mean, I was something I wouldn't even have told my own family. It's just, I'm feeling a bit indisposed today, but it'll pass. No, you must tell me, said Baba. So gradually through the years, from that going to that other extreme where you have to be absolutely dependent on Baba about all external things, then slowly, 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 as the years went through, then Baba again gave one back more that opportunity to make your own decisions and things like that. Till at the very end where, as you say, Baba's work was so paramount that these things were meaningless. They were meaningless from the beginning, but because of certain training of us, he used to make importance out of them. But actually, the Abhis Babos is everything is zero. And then, of course, Baba's health was not good at the end. He used to get these jerks, and one would feel, you know, oh, if we could only just take a little, even a portion of Baba's burden and make it lighter. I know people sometimes ask me, why do I get this expression that I do in Baba's eyes when I do my drawings? But that's the expression I used to see when Baba would be relaxed and with us, and sort of might say the curtains down. Whereas naturally when people come to Baba with all love and everything, they must see Baba and that love emanating from Baba. But we used to also see that other side. Well, that's a closed chapter now, and now a new chapter's open with you as a new humanity, and you're the ones that are going to have to carry on and do Baba's work for him. And to me, I mean, the most beautiful miracle is the fact of the way Baba's entered your heart. Baba drew us externally, and from this external meeting, then we felt him in our hearts. Whereas you all have felt Baba and know Baba's with you without even having had to make that external contact. And that is the most beautiful. So it is now for you all to carry on. Jai Baba.